time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
The All-Star break is over. I'm back from Los Angeles. Paul is rocking his Seattle Sonics jersey ahead of his fun long weekend in Seattle. And,
yes,
of course, we have Sean Mapes with us, fake Lance McCullers Jr., as always. How you guys doing? Happy Thursday?
Doing good. Mark? Welcome back. How
Thank
was
it? It was fun.
How many brunches?
I actually did. I'm not a brunch person.
What the hell?
I don't eat until later.
What's
I know.
What's the point of going to Los Angeles if you don't go to Beverly Hills and pay outrageous prices for the experience of brunch?
Everything in LA is outrageously priced. When I would look at my Uber trips, I wanted to vomit.
Yeah, they're not.
It's
they're not great.
Insane.
And it takes a while to get from point A to point B. Have you heard about the traffic in Los Angeles?
It's bad.
It's a thing.
I stayed in Santa Monica because that's where my cousin is. I actually really enjoyed Santa Monica.
Yeah.
I had never been there before. It was like a beach town vibe. It had some really good restaurants, but it wasn't as crazy and congested and touristy as L.A. So big fan of Santa Monica. And the weather was very pretty. Had a good time at the All-Star game. Got to chat with some of the Astros coaches and whatnot. So it was a good experience overall.
Have you ever heard the song Santa Monica by Everclear?
I don't think I have.
Some would argue it's the greatest song of the 1990s. And by some, that would be me. I love
Better
that song.
Than Something in the Way.
Well, no, that Something in the Way is just a vibe.
It's just a vibe. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, just a vibe.
We're
a vibe here on Vanessa and Gallant, and we're glad that you're with us for this vibe that we're vibing.
Way to bring it back on track.
Thank you. The Astros, of course, got the short end of the stick with their schedule. They play at 12:10 and 5:40 today, a doubleheader against the New York Yankees. Most teams in the in MLB got 5 days, some 4 days. The Astros only got 3 days, and it's a doubleheader.
As we continue to use words that possibly date us,
okay,
this might be the most hyped doubleheader of all time.
Hyped.
I'm not even saying hyped. I'm saying hype. Just H-Y-P-E.
Okay.
I'm not even going to put the D at the end of that, Vanessa. This is probably about as good as it gets for a doubleheader.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the two best teams in the American League playing each other twice on the same day. I can't remember the last time that something of this kind of magnitude's happened. And again, it's the first game out of the All-Star break, but I'm going to guess it's probably the only two games that are going today. I think most people are getting back into action on Friday when it comes to the second half of the season. Obviously, I didn't check because I only pay attention to what happens to the Houston Astros across baseball.
And the Mariners.
Yeah, and the Mariners too, but like only occasionally with the Mariners. Like, I'll be honest, I wasn't paying any attention to my side chick until she started working out and won 14 games in a row. But this is exciting. I'm looking forward to this afternoon to sit back, pour myself a mezcal with a grapefruit, a little Paloma, and watch two baseball games back to back.
It will be a good one. It is what a lot of people would say is the best team in baseball versus what some other people say is the best team in baseball. So I think it's going to be a good matchup. My ex-boyfriend in high school, by the way, would make fun of me because I never understood whether it was hype or hyped.
Well, it was hyped, but now kids just say, yo, this is hype.
Like they dropped the D?
Yeah, they got rid of it. And they say it like, again, like it's a vibe.
Yeah, it's bussing for real, for real.
Mm-hmm.
All right, on the mound today, we have Christian Javier for that first game. And then for the second game that's going to start at 5:40-ish, it'll be Luis Garcia. So Verlander, they're not putting him on the mound as soon as some people might have thought that he would be there. But, yeah, so Astros-Yankees should be fun. Like you said, not a lot else going on today in the baseball world.
Right, and you have two complete wild cards on the mound for you. I mean, with Luis Garcia and Christian Javier, you're getting a lot of strikeouts every single time they're on the hill, but they have not been particularly consistent, especially Javier. I mean, Javier, what? He had like 10 strikeouts in three innings, but he only lasted 3 2/3 innings or something like that in his last outing. So I'm intrigued to see how these guys do. I mean, if you want to have faith in these two starters going into the postseason, maybe it's unfair to have to say that this is like a true barometer for the postseason, given that it's the first game out of the All-Star break, it's a doubleheader, but how these two do in these two games against New York, I do feel like the Astros coaching staff, Dusty Baker, they should be really judging them and determining whether or not they will be trusted in big-time situations, partly based off of this game. I don't know how much stock you put into it, but I think this is a pretty good way to measure how Javier and Garcia can handle the pressure.
There was an article, Texas Sports Nation, by Chandler Rome on five things to watch as the second half of the season kicks off.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, what happens at the trade deadline? We've heard Juan Soto's name popped around, and obviously we'll talk about that throughout the show, should the Astros pursue him. Second, is there a center field conundrum? Third, how does the starting surplus resolve itself? Number four, is Jeremy Peña reaching the rookie wall, which is something you've brought up? And then fifth, are the Mariners for real, which we know Paul has been watching? I thought overall this is a very good list. I think this is, look, the Astros are great. They always pull it together when it matters in playoffs, but these are some comments slash concerns that I think are fascinating.
Five, we will find out tomorrow. That game between the Astros and Mariners is actually sold out, which is a bummer for me because I just assumed I was going to be able to get to go to the game. The Mariners, I can't remember the last time that they actually sold out a game. They're extremely excited, obviously, with the 14-game winning streak. So five will figure it out. Number two, what was number two again one more time?
Number two was...
Number two.
What happens at the trade deadline is number one. Number two is there a center field conundrum?
Yes. I'll just say it. They don't have a good enough center fielder. Like Jake Myers or Chaz McCormick or Jose Siri, when they're throwing him out there, it's not good enough. And with Michael Brantley injured right now, they do not have a good enough. After that, I just want to go through all of them really quickly. Three, because
sure.
One, we're not going to, I mean, one, there's plenty of time right. left. Three is the surplus of starting pitching, correct?
Surplus, yeah. And, you know, with Lance McCullers Jr. coming back, and then there's nobody that's poor enough to where you really want to bump them down immediately.
Right. That ties itself with number one. I think we're going to figure that out in probably the next week or so. Three and one, determining whether or not the Astros say, you know what, let's use one of these guys to get something extra. And then as far as four goes, it's a long season. I don't really know that Peña's. I don't feel like nervous about the idea that Peña might hit a wall, but it is something I guess to keep in the back of your mind.
That's the one that I'm not worried about at all because he hasn't shown any. It's almost like Astros fans are so cautious because look, Peña had huge shoes to fill with Carlos Correa's exit. It's almost like Astros fans, in a way, sometimes are waiting for the other shoe to drop. Or I shouldn't say Astros fans. I should say baseball writers. When it comes to Jeremy Peña. He hasn't shown any signs of decline. He's had a couple of errors, silly errors, rookie mistakes. He's had a couple of days where he hasn't been, you know, great in the batter's box, but he's also hit two walk-offs. He's also been solid. I'll just be honest, number four out of this list is the one that I'm not worried about.
I trust him as a hitter, which is pretty crazy to say about a rookie. His fielding, though, as you mentioned, is something that has been, I'm not going to say disappointing, but he was billed as very good defensively, and he's been, I think, above average at best as a defender. You could argue worse. So is that going to be a problem down the road? I don't know. I mean, I offense is much more important than defense when it comes to a young shortstop who's filling the shoes of Carlos Correa.
We'll keep an eye on that list for sure. Again, the Astros with that doubleheader against the Yankees today. All right, last night, the ESPYs. Award shows are what they are, but there was a nice moment as Dick Vitale was honored with the
Vitale.
I don't know. Dickie V is actually the proper way to say it.
There you go.
Dickie V was honored with the Jim Valvano Award.
Yes.
Keep chasing your dreams. Keep chasing your goals. And to me, all of you in this room are special winners in the game of life and what you've done to pursue your goals. And remember, just remember, perseverance plus passion plus pride equals win in the game of life. God bless. Thank you.
They had to wrap him like three or four times because he went so long. But I guess he had throat surgery or something. He couldn't talk 3 days ago. He's been through so much.
Whoa.
And it was a very, very nice speech.
I mean, he's one of the loudest people on the planet, and that's saying something coming from me.
Saying a lot coming from me.
That's pretty impressive, though, that he was back out there 3 days later. They cut him off? They cut the guy? They were doing the rap music. Really? That's the one part during the ESPYs that anyone cares about. Because the rest of it, let's be honest, like all award shows, it's a bunch of people sitting in a room together smelling their own farts. Occasionally with someone, you know, slapping someone else because they made a joke about their wife. I'm talking about the Oscars there. The ESPYs are no different, except for these people are like, you know, these awards really don't matter because they aren't the MVP awards. It would be one thing if they actually had all the sports awards the same night and then they turned it into something like the Academy Awards. Still, I'm not watching award shows. To circle back to Dick Vitale, I think it's pretty impressive that he came back from doing that 3 days later. Is it more impressive than Val Kilmer in Top Gun Maverick?
Let's compare cancer patients, Paul Gallant.
Well, I'm just saying, like, as we talk about people that are speaking, like, what was the more impressive performance? Is it Dick Vitale or it's a slow sports day, Vanessa?
It was Dickie V for
or
sure.
Or Val Kilmer.
No, because Val Kilmer only said a couple of words,
but
Sean, the tiebreaker.
He did say him.
Yeah, he only said a couple words, and I think he was even more. I mean, this is what an awful position you put me in, yeah, Paul. Where yeah. I'm going to have
embrace
to say
debate.
He sounded much worse than Dickie V.
No sports happened last night.
Val Kilmer, they used AI, patient. Right? They used like artificial something for his voice.
Yes, they did. That. You
yes,
can't confirm
I can.
That.
He said it.
Nope.
He wrote it.
Fake news.
Okay.
Listen, embrace debate. Nothing happened last night. I'm sorry. I tried to create a sports conversation based off of something in pop culture and something that took place at the ESPYs last night, Vanessa watched.
I'm about to be a massive hypocrite because I'm going to ask you if Trey Mancini got snubbed. So Trey Mancini came back from cancer.
Who's Trey Mancini?
He is a baseball player, Orioles, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So he had cancer, had to go through some really intense chemotherapy, and obviously is now cancer-free and playing baseball again.
And he didn't win.
He lost out on comeback of the year to Klay Thompson, who tore an ACL.
That's anti-Italian discrimination, 100%. And also, Klay Thompson, for whatever reason, decided to thank Kobe Bryant and Kobe Bryant's late daughter in his acceptance speech, which I thought was just kind of strange as we continue to be, I don't know, like towing the line of being tone deaf or inappropriate. I don't know. Trey Mancini beat cancer. It seems pretty easy to give it to that guy.
It is literally, they just had a speech of Jimmy Valvano, who had cancer, passed away. The Jimmy Valvano Award, giving it to somebody, you know, honoring Dickie V, who had cancer.
ESPN doesn't care about cancer.
It's just erroneous.
I'm just saying the facts, people.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about Paul's favorite NBA player, James Harden. Details on his new contract, plus Tom Brady's new weapon, and what does this mean for the Rob Gronkowski situation? That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5.
Real.
Let's go.
Fun. Sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're rolling along. It is a Thursday, I believe, and we have some James Harden news.
Oh, fun.
Former Houston Rocket, and Paul Gallant is, you know, his favorite, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2 years, $68.6 million deal, including a player option to return to the 76ers. That is the deal, sources tell ESPN. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski on that deal.
Listen, the Sixers will want him to be in great shape when he returns to training camp in the fall. And this is a player who's made almost, with this deal, $275 million in his career. But James Harden, you know, he's spent a lot of time talking with Daryl Morey, the organization, about wanting to win, about doing what he felt could be his part with that, declining the option. So now 2 years, $68.6 million. And again, a $33 million guaranteed salary for the coming season.
Okay, so Harden deserves some credit for this, that he is willing to be unselfish. But also, listen to what Woj just said about that deal. It's a 2-year deal with a player option. So if he plays at the level that he has played at in the not so distant past, he will opt out. Right now, he is at an all-time low. This helps him because I think he realizes that he is a PR disaster because he has quit on two teams in the last two calendar years, that he has looked out of shape at times, that he has barely been on the court when he has been on the court, he hasn't looked anywhere close to the same guy. He is, I feel like, more focusing on his brand here than he's actually saying, I'm focused on winning. I think he realizes right now that he finally has outdone himself when it comes to making people dislike him.
He's finally more self-aware because he has lacked self-awareness something bad.
I think so, and I imagine that his relationship with Daryl Morey maybe allowed for a conversation between the two to happen where Morey said, look, like, you know, you're not, you haven't been the guy that you need to be. And if you want to prove, I mean, maybe Morey even brought it up to him, said, like, if you want to prove to people that you care about winning and win some respect back, this is what you have to do. I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened. That's just speculation on my part. I want to make that clear. But I think it's smart that Harden did this. I don't know, though, that Philadelphia is by any means like a top, I don't know, 2-3 contender in the Eastern Conference. I still think it's Milwaukee number one, probably Miami and Boston tied for number two, and I guess Philly after that. And I feel we should probably, I don't know, pump the brakes on giving James Harden credit for a 2-year deal with a player option in the second deal. It's sort of like the same thing with Verlander. Verlander's second year option is a player option too. And as soon as he gets to 130 innings, which isn't going to be too long from now, he's probably going to be able to opt out, and the Astros have a tough decision to make after
I'm glad
that.
Woj brought up Daryl Morey, because to your point, if anybody can get to James Harden, I think it's him. Daryl Morey, who I like, by the way, excellent with the media. He was able to build relationships that paid dividends, really helped him to the point to where when he peaced out and left and said, I need to spend time with my family, and then a week later was at the 76ers, everyone was like, oh, good for Daryl. So Daryl is very media and PR aware.
Yep.
And I think he may be one of the only people that James Harden listens to. I don't think James Harden will ever be vintage James Harden again. I think that's done. I think that ship has sailed. They have Joel Embiid. So does he need to be? Probably not. I think he just needs to keep his hamstring healthy and not be a diva.
A follow-up question to that, though. What is vintage James Harden? Because vintage James Harden, I think, is a damn good regular season player. And I think he can be a damn good regular season player again.
You think he's going to be dropping like 40 like he was consistently?
I think occasionally. I mean, shoot, when he first
joined. So you think he can get back to where he was?
But I think in the regular season, yes. And again, like I guess I look at that and I think to myself, well, you also see random players on teams that are 20 games below 500 at the end of the year that are averaging 25 points a game. I don't think Harden putting up statistics is an impossibility. I think that Harden being anything more than he has ever been in the playoffs, though, I will agree with you on this front. He will never be more than what we have seen from him on that front. He just plays a style that is too reliant on generous referees and on, I think, defenders who are not as aggressive in the regular season to maintain that lack of aggression in the postseason.
Sean, what say you? I know you follow the NBA closely on the James Harden deal.
I think it's a good deal for the Sixers, especially because he is on that kind of one-year prove-it deal. It's funny, it's $32 million. It's like, yeah, prove it to us, but we'll pay you $32 million. But he did opt out. I mean, he is costing himself like $15 million just from what he could have been making this year. So I think he'll be better. I think it's a situation where he'll be better than he was last year, because last year was like straight up embarrassing. Like, he played like a guy who's going to be out of the league in 2 years,
right?
Especially towards the end, where he's definitely not, and I don't think very many people are ever going to get to the heights that he was, like finishing second in MVP, first or second MVP for like 5 straight years.
Yeah,
that's what I mean by vintage James Harden. Yeah. That's more of what I'm saying. Can he be a solid regular season player?
He's always going to be the second best player on his team.
Right.
I think that he can be Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. You know, but yeah, as you said, MVP candidate, hell no.
Yeah, he can. That's he can be like, I don't know. Let's see. He can be like Jaylen Brown level offense. That's really all
which,
they need.
Which is very, very good, by the way.
Yeah, which is very good. And when you're playing next to an MVP candidate, Joel Embiid, who's unguardable for most of the league, that's all you need to do.
Kyle Rudolph signs with the Bucks. Paul Gallant, a Boston native over here, is Lord and Savior. Tom Brady does have a new tight end, Kyle Rudolph. And this, according to Diana Russini from ESPN, she was on Get Up this morning, and she said they are moving on as if Gronk has fully retired, so they're hoping Kyle Rudolph can be that new tight end target. I like Kyle Rudolph a lot, but he struggles to stay healthy, so I'm interested to see what he still has in the tank.
And it's hard to believe that there's a whole lot left in the tank, especially if you just take a look at his 2021 numbers. I mean, 26 catches for 257 yards and one touchdown. That ain't good. And I mean, look, you can say, all right, well, he was in New York with Daniel Jones, but I feel like this is one of those guys who, you know, the game has kind of passed him by. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. Like, he's had a pretty good career sticking in the league for 10-plus years. I mean, this is going to be, I think, season number 11 for him. But, yeah, if the Bucs are trying to intimate that they're moving past Gronk by making this move, I don't buy it for a second. Like, they'll with the way Gronk played last year, in, I think, a very unexpectedly good yeah. Level of play, I don't think Rudolph means that they won't bring him back.
He was on Good Morning Football this morning, or excuse me, Good Morning America this morning, and refuted what his girlfriend, Camille Kostek, I think it is, Kostek, yes. Something like that, had said.
Ooh.
She said she thinks that he is not retired. She said that he's doing the same thing as Brady, like, will I or won't I? I trust Camille. I'm on Team Camille. I think the pillow talk is real. I think that she knows Gronk better than Gronk maybe even knows himself, and I am predicting that Gronk will most likely at some point be back.
Yeah, I think it's definitely likely. It really depends, I think, on, though, if the Bucs are playing well, too. Like, say the Bucs have a season where everything kind of crashes back to earth, which some people expected last year just because of the amount of old players that they had on the team when they won the Super Bowl in 2020. I think that there is definitely a chance for the Bucs to go off a cliff. Luckily for them, they have my Lord and Savior. My Tom, he's an awesome Tom. He's better than all the Toms.
Anti-sacrilege or sacrilege?
Why is it sacrilege? It's my religion.
Yeah.
It's sacrilegious, that's what you just said.
Your religion can be anything nowadays. So congratulations.
Wow.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, NFL countdown. We are at 49 days.
I have a Tom Brady candle at my house.
And that's true. He actually
seven
does.
Pieces of memorabilia. And you just shunning my Lord and Savior.
I'm from Indiana. I'm always going to hate Tom Brady. Mm. The Texans are moving on up on a national list. Here where they...
Oh, boy.
This is big for the Texans.
It's Hear so
that.
Big.
That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Pat, hush.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
All right, folks, every day we count down to the regular season NFL kickoff. Today, the number is 49. We are officially beneath 50 days, which I like. And every day, Paul Gallant picks a jersey number in accordance with that number. So 49, who is your 49 jersey number?
This is one of the toughest ones that we've had. So there are two NFL Hall of Famers that wore number 49. First off, there is Bobby Mitchell, who played his whole career for the Cleveland Browns and the then Washington football team. A question for both of you, for both Sean Mapes Behind the Glass and Vanessa. He played running back. Excuse me. He played halfback.
Okay.
Can you name
that was the thing back then.
Can you name... It's funny that it was called that then, and I mean, everyone still kind of calls it that, but there was another position that he played. It is not a position that you traditionally hear these days. Can you guess what his secondary position was? Bobby Mitchell, NFL Hall of Famer that wore number 49.
You said it's not a position players play anymore?
It's a position that's not listed as what it is now today.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
Oh, okay. So it's like a different name for it?
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know.
Wow. I mean, geez. It's just throw.
Rover?
No. Vanessa.
The centerpiece.
No. Flanker. Flanker.
Flanker. That's a great word.
Flanker used to be what they called wide receivers, and then they changed the name to, I think, wide receiver. There was also split end for a while, too. And it's weird. If you played, like, peewee football or high school football, you probably saw in your team playbook, like, they would list split ends.
Bring back the word flanker. I like that.
I think flanker is a good name. They would, like, line up in a three-point stance way outside the hash marks.
Oh, yeah,
with
the wide receivers would line up in three-point stance.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I know. It's so goofy looking. I don't know why people did that. There's no point to get in the three-point stance as a wide receiver unless you're running straight down the field. The other guy who wore number 49 is a guy by the name of Walt Kiesling.
Oh.
Walt Kiesling
Walt.
Played in the NFL from 1926 through 1938. There are four teams that he played for that are now defunct. Can you name any of them? Vanessa, you're on the spot first for this.
Baltimore Colts.
Nope. Incorrect. Sean Mapes.
The Canton Blue Jays.
That was kind of close.
Oh.
Okay. The first team that he played for, and I mean, they should be canceled for this, but he played for the Duluth Eskimos.
Yo. Can't do that now.
What if I guessed that right?
Right.
you were pretty close. Number two, the Pottsville Maroons. I have no idea where the hell Pottsville is.
I don't know why you don't know that. I have their jersey.
Oh, damn. Well,
yeah.
Why didn't you guess it then?
Pottsville a lot back
then. Yeah,
in the day.
I love it. Yeah.
The Chicago Cardinals.
Okay, I have heard of that one, actually.
That organization still exists technically, but, you know. And then he played for the Bears and Packers before, get this, the Pittsburgh
Steelers?
No.
Just say the name.
Blue Jays?
No. Pirates. Oh. This was back in the day where where cities were lazy and just had the same nickname for every single
Wait,
team.
Oh.
Yeah. So he played for the Pittsburgh Pirates of the NFL. New York Giants were the same as the New York Giants in the National League of Baseball. It's weird. Every team, I want to say, where's another team that had the same? Anyway, I'll get back to that later. So that's number 49, everybody.
There you go, number 49.
Very entertaining 49. And, bad questions.
Nice history lesson from Paul Gallant. All right, guys, the Texans are moving on up. What can we say? The Texans are no longer listed as number 32, 31, or even 30.
Oh.
On the power rankings, the Texans, yes, are listed. This is, by the way, an ESPN Plus rankings. They've been coming out with rankings every day based on a couple of things, including data and then info from GMs and coaches around the league.
And this is
the Houston Texans are ranked 27th overall.
For the next three seasons. It's projections for the next 3 years.
And this is literally the best, the top, like the most that I've seen them ranked.
It's football time in Houston, and we're ready to play. They're just moving on up, Vanessa.
They are. 28 is the Lions, by the way. 29, the Giants. 30, the Bears. 31, the Panthers. And 32, the Atlanta Falcons.
You can't stop this upward movement, okay?
The future is bright.
Feet Guy? Yeah, you're right, Sean. Feet Guy 19 on Twitch says 27 is too damn high. Actually, you're wrong, because Derek Stingley Jr. is going to take the NFL by storm, okay? You just don't get it. You don't see it. You don't see what we see. 27th, honestly, might be too low, guys. Just moving on up.
Hot take, I actually
agree. I believe in
Davis Mills.
I actually
agree with this article.
General Mills.
It is weird, though, that all the bottom teams for, like, this year are also the bottom teams for 3 years from now.
Here's the thing. So it's the panel, by the way, was Jeremy Fowler, Lewis Riddick, Seth Walder, and Field Yates. Here's the thing. GMs always say around the draft time that you don't know the results of a draft until 2-3 years after the draft.
What? You don't know it right away?
Right.
Unbelievable.
So we don't know which one of these teams are going to randomly 3 years from now look back and say that was a sneaky good draft. Could Davis Mills develop even more? I don't know. But I like seeing a list where the Texans are not ranked 30, 31, 32. I don't care if it's for 3 years from now, 5 years from now, for this season. It's refreshing to know that the Texans, in the eyes of ESPN, are at least on a little bit of an upward track.
Are only the sixth worst.
Guys, I'm trying to be optimistic. These are the teams I've covered in Houston.
I feel so bad for you guys.
The Rockets, the Texans.
I feel bad for you for that. I mean, I've been gone the last 2 years. Yeah. And I mean, like, this is what you come back to. And I just feel bad. Like, why would you care? You know, it's...
Well, the other angle that we've talked about, though, on the show, and this is serious, is that they're in the AFC South. So we don't know how the Colts are going to look. We don't know how long Matt Ryan is going to last. Ryan Tannehill with the Titans, don't trust him, never have. Trevor Lawrence, it's not guaranteed he's going to get fitted for a gold jacket. So they could be the best team in the AFC South in a couple of years.
So here are the teams that are directly ahead of them. Let's just do the five in front. 22, Miami Dolphins.
Too low.
23, Arizona Cardinals. Not that far ahead of them for the next 3 years. 24, Seattle Seahawks. 25, Washington. 26, Jacksonville. Of the teams directly above them, I don't buy that with Washington. And
I don't buy Jacksonville.
I don't buy it with Miami.
Yeah, I don't buy it with Jacksonville.
I could.
And Seattle. What's Seattle got going?
Yeah. Oh, Seattle's got nothing.
Well, they don't even have a Davis Mills.
No, Russell Wilson, as annoying as he is, was really holding that thing.
So let's talk about Miami specifically, because I am not a Tua believer, but Sean, you are. I don't think that the Dolphins should be ahead of the Texans. Yes, they have a new coach in Mike McDaniel. They have a new offensive coordinator in Frank Smith. great. They have weapons for Tua. But do you think they should be above the Texans? Why or why not?
Yeah, because the roster, even if you just take out, even if you say Tua sucks, like the roster around Tua is so much better than the Texans roster with like Darren Armstead and Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill.
Brandon Cooks is just as good as Tyreek Hill.
Well, let's see what the Madden ratings have to say about.
Yeah, we'll get to Madden ratings.
That's how I take all my lists, is by Madden ratings.
Do you think the Dolphins above or below the Texans? I think the Texans should be above the Dolphins.
I think they should, too. I mean, I'll ask this question right now, and call me crazy if you want. Would you rather have still some relative unknown with Davis Mills or a pretty proven sample size with Tua?
I'm Davis Mills all day, every day.
Is the proven sample size like 1.5 years?
Yeah.
Versus 10 games of Davis Mills?
I mean, were the Dolphins not better with Ryan Fitzpatrick under center during a season where Tua should have been handed the reins?
Well, that's because the OC was Chan Gailey, who loves Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the offense was tailored to Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I don't know. Ex-Patriots coach Brian Flores, I think, even though he was disappointing as the head coach of the Dolphins, I feel like he knows what's good and what isn't, and he was never into Tua.
Oh, yeah. All of the success that ex-Patriots coaches have had coaching AFC East teams.
Yeah, it happened.
He was the good one.
He was the best one.
He never made the playoffs.
So
he almost won 8 games once.
I think that the Raiders are going to be good, but I get really, really tired every year of Derek Carr having a little bit of what I would refer to as a victim complex. Here's what he told The Athletic. This year's going to be fun. No one thinks anything of us, and I think that's what makes it fun, is you always have to put the ball down and play the football games. You get frustrated when you see other people's names on things and this and that, and you're like, we're here too. We feel like we got better too. I thought we made the playoffs. I do think it's going to be exciting to see him, Davante Adams, but why does Derek Carr act like everybody doubts them when people on the national media actually usually praise him a lot?
I think, though, this is the first year where there actually has been a little bit of this, and you know what? I don't blame a guy for being completely crazy and trying to find people who doubt. I always actually get a kick out of the energy that some people put into finding doubters. So, yeah, he's been sensitive a lot during his career.
Sensitive's a great word for it.
But I also think that if we're being truly honest with ourselves, ask the average NFL fan, if they have to pick who wins the AFC West and who comes in last in the AFC West between Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Derek Carr, and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Carr is in last place every single time.
Not for me.
Who do you have Carr ahead of?
Russell Wilson.
Whoa, damn.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would even go that far. I feel like the end of this coming season will be very telling for just where Russell Wilson is right now in his career. I can't quite pull the trigger yet, no matter how annoying Russell Wilson might
be. The trigger has been pulled. He named his dog Bronco.
He named his child Wynn.
He did.
By the way, apparently Ciara was wearing a very awesome dress last night.
And I'm
was
sure just you thinking, liked it.
I was, well, listen, I didn't see it. I was just thinking about how Russell Wilson has multiple times posted like mildly creepy videos of him in bed, like speaking in a sexy voice.
It's a bit much. They're married, okay? So it's okay per the Bible, but it's a bit much. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about the latest on Jimmy G. Would the Texans be interested? Where should he land? Plus, record low viewers for the MLB All-Star Game. What does each league need to do to bump up that viewership? But first, Paul's going to tell you about his friends at PIN.
Passive Investor Network, baby. I just met with one of the folks at the Passive Investor Network yesterday, Ronnie, who is this guy who looks like Kurt Russell in the movie Stargate. And this guy is one of many people on the Passive Investor Network team that are going to help you out when it comes to real estate investment. You got to have somebody who knows construction on that side of things, and Ronnie's been doing it for 25 years. And if you go on the bus tour for the Passive Investor Network, which you can do by going to passiveinvestor.net, entering promo code ESPN, you get to meet Ronnie. You get to ask him about all the things that he sees, the things that he knows. I mean, he's a funny guy. I got a kick out of him, and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to that, as does the Passive Investor Network. Look, it's intimidating to invest money these days, and real estate is one of those places, though, where you feel pretty confident you can make money, and the Passive Investor Network is going to hold your hand and take you through it with a 5-year personalized plan for you to invest in that real estate. So, I mean, look, why not check it out? Passiveinvestor.net, promo code ESPN. Go on that bus tour on a Saturday and just check out what they do. It's really something. When you see it with your eyes, It'll make so much sense to you. PassiveInvestor.net, promo code ESPN. It's the Passive Investor Network.
ESPN. 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, where is Jimmy G going to go? Is he going to stay in San Francisco? Will another team trade for him? Where would he go, and would he be a starter? A lot of questions have loomed around the quarterback who kind of struggles to stay healthy.
Adam He's Schefter, so handsome.
It's objectively true. Adam Schefter reported that Jimmy G has been allowed now officially to seek a trade. And you took exception with this report. Go ahead and complain.
This was reported 4 months ago, and Schefter's reporting it like it's his own news. Matt Maiocco, I think that's how you pronounce his name, of NBC Sports Bay Area, he reported this on March 28th. And all of a sudden, Jimmy G is now being put up. He's allowed
because
to search his own
Adam
trade
Schefter
out now.
Because I think Adam Schefter waited until it was official. Like, they were officially given permission. Everybody knows that his agent, I think it's Don Yee, has wanted a trade for a while now.
Schefter's taking credit for something that took place 4 months ago.
Paul Gallant wants to fight Adam Schefter.
No, I don't want to fight him. But
you
I mean,
could win.
He's this offseason, what has he done? Like, it's been carrying water for Deshaun Watson and David Mulugeta, and it's this, which, I mean, he's 4 months late on this.
Regardless, Ian Rappaport, another newsbreaker for NFL Network, said nothing is going to happen until he is truly at 100%.
Being able to withstand the rigors of a practice and or potentially a game. That is why mid-August is essentially the day where he'll be fully cleared. And at that point, we will start the process of figuring out or kickstart the process of figuring out where's he going to go? Is he going to be traded? Is he going to be released? Is he going to somehow, some way stay in the 49ers roster? Maybe. Still so much to be answered. But all of that comes after he regains his full health.
So I think Jimmy G is going to go to whoever has a hurt quarterback. And obviously, I don't wish injury on any quarterback in the league. But I think that there is going to be a team that sees his winning percentage. Now, I know he doesn't play a lot because he gets hurt, but his winning percentage is very high. And when a quarterback gets hurt, it always happens sometime in training camp earlier in the season. I think that's when Jimmy G makes his exit, and by then maybe his shoulder will be healed. Where do you see him ending up?
They should keep him, the 49ers. I don't think they should move him. I feel like that you've seen what they have been when he has been healthy over the last couple of years. They are a winning football team with him under center, and I get it. That doesn't mean everything. Quarterback win-loss records are a completely overstated statistic. But there's no denying that this team has been good with him. And a team that made it to the NFC Championship game last year and almost won said NFC Championship game against a team that barely won the Super Bowl themselves, a team that's been to the Super Bowl two of the last three seasons as well with Jimmy G under center, that's a damn good team still. Do you really feel comfortable turning the keys over to Trey Lance when the guys had to rework his entire throwing motion over the course of the offseason? I don't think that you should, and I don't want to sound like Emmanuel Acho calling Trey Lance one play Trey, but no, San Francisco
we haven't
should
done
be
that
smart.
Bit in a while.
Yeah, I can't believe that's a nickname. I mean, it's unfair to Trey Lance. Like, give him a
it's
little
actually
bit of time.
Not a nickname. It's just something Acho says.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah. Damn, I'm sort of enabling him.
Sean, where do you think Jimmy G ends up?
If I'm the Browns and Deshaun gets suspended for more than like four games, I just trade for him. I'd trade for him, cut Brissett, because if you're if you're gonna like try to be a for real team this year, you're gonna need someone better than Jacoby Brissett for half the season.
And as somebody who watched football in Indiana, I can only say amen to that. All right, so we'll see what happened. The Browns are apparently not expected to pursue him. But the Browns also have said a lot of things in the past and then completely gone against it. So I do agree that that could be a really good landing spot.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I don't take Jimmy Haslam at his word.
Yeah, no idea why, right? No idea why.
He's really truthful.
7.5 million viewers. That's all MLB All-Star Game had this year. It's the lowest number
Damn.
For a while.
I actually watched it.
I was there. It was fun. But this is what a lot of leagues are facing. According to Austin Karp, who is the Sports Business Journal managing editor, here are the most recent All-Star Game audiences among the big four leagues. MLB on Fox was 7.51. The Pro Bowl, which was on ABC, Disney, etc., 6.69. NBA nice. On TNT/TBS, 6.28. NHL on ABC, 1.15. What does each league need to do to to improve the ratings? Because these used to be huge events. We know that Roger Goodell and the NFL have said they're kind of brainstorming on the Pro Bowl because guys just do not care about it.
But people still watch it.
But people, anything NFL related, people are going to watch. What does each league need to do to incentivize this more for A, players to want to play in it, and B, people
just,
to watch it?
Just get rid of it. These guys make too much money and they're not going to go 100%. They're just not. I mean, it's not a true game. It has no stakes. It has no impact. And I think now you would much rather watch a game where two teams are clearly trying than a essentially like a goofing off session, a riffing session amongst a bunch of superstars. It's sort of akin to what you would be watching would be if, imagine the best musician in a bunch of different bands came together and started just riffing without having practiced.
I would absolutely watch it, but I love music.
But it probably would suck. And then after a couple of years, you would probably think to yourself, oh, okay, I'm not really into this anymore, because they would not be going 100%. They'd just be goofing off and having fun. It's not fun to watch. There's nothing they can do to fix it. I only watch the baseball All-Star game because nothing is happening this time of year, and I need something to talk about the next day for my job. That is the only reason I watch it.
You think all four big leagues should just not have any sort of All-Star event at all?
I mean, yeah.
So no home run derby?
I don't even really like the home run derby anymore.
I think you can still have an All-Star event and like a All-Star weekend, but like having an actual game where, like in basketball, it's 12-minute quarters, and in football, it's 15-minute. Like an actual game is insane. It should be some sort of like football 7-on-7. Like have quarterbacks be team captains for the.
I would keep the dunk contest, the home run derby. And then, like what you're saying about 7-on-something.
Yeah, you just have to rework it to where it's not literally, hey, you know these games that you watch? I mean, for baseball, 162 games. Basketball, 80-something games. The football, 17. And then the playoffs. And then the Super Bowl. And now this lesser version. Yeah, let's just have a worse version of all those. Like, let's just have a worse. You know how you love how much guys try? No, that's not what we're doing. Just have something different where guys can pick teams and just famous football players, famous basketball players, famous baseball players, doing something different.
The only option that I can think of that actually would make one All-Star game more entertaining would be instead of having these guys actually play in a 5-on-5 game, in the NBA All-Star game, to have a tournament of 1-on-1 games, best to 11. You would classify guys based off of their size and their skill set to maybe make it a little bit different.
And you can just make the bracket based off of the leading vote getters in each position.
Yeah.
It's just the top centers all go against each other. And then you can make it a bracket where it's, you know, they all then play each other. So you have a mismatch where you have Joel Embiid versus Steph Curry. I don't know why I had Seth Curry.
I would watch that. There's nothing you could. The football's dead. It's a violent game. Hockey, same thing. Like, you
football's
can't,
dead?
You can't make an All-Star game. Yeah, I know. I'm one of those
people. What are we going to do in the fall?
There's so many concussions. It'll never survive. Remember when everyone was saying that like 5 years ago? Same thing with the Anthem stuff. Oh, no one's going to watch it anymore. Yeah, okay. I think, though, with football and hockey, the sports are too violent to make the game any better. And with baseball, one of my big issues with baseball, I get it. You want to put everybody in the game. But if there's no stakes to the game and you just are randomly pulling and putting in new players every 5 seconds, I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like it matters that much.
Every year I watch the MLB All-Star game because there's nothing going on until like the fourth or fifth inning. Once you get like several different relievers in and the starting lineup is completely different and there's normally like three guys I just don't know or have only heard of. I'm like, oh, that's what his face looks like. That's what Ty France looks like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty good on this.
J.J. Watt. We're going to talk about him coming up later in the show because I just realized we need to go to break. So coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, a little bit of Astros action happening today. An update on two injured players in the Astros organization that we've gotten within the last couple of minutes. Plus, it's soccer time in Houston. That's coming up next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.